chick flicks, romantic comedies, rom-coms. You love them, you hate them, and I'm here to eviscerate them. This is the Rom-Com Killjoys podcast. I'm your host, Janelle Walker. I'm a writer and researcher who studies gender theory, ideology, and representations of both in popular culture. I've gathered together my favorite pop culture literate friends to take your favorite rom-com way too seriously in order to understand why we love to hate these movies and what they're trying to tell us about love, relationships, and marriage. Now, let's get on with some feminist joy killing. Hi, everybody, and welcome back to the show. This week, we have a special doubleheader, the first doubleheader of the show. It's a fuck buddy showdown. We're going to be discussing two rom-coms from the year of our Lord 2011, the first of which is No Strings Attached, the second of which is Friends with Benefits. And to discuss both with me here today is my good friend, Maida Marston. Maida, tell the people a little bit about yourself.
Hi, I'm Maida Marston. I am currently a graduate student, a perennial graduate student, and I would say I'm a grad student by day and a theater director by night.
On a personal note, kind of funny, but I think it's funny. You and I are the ones to discuss this episode because I know I can say, while currently single, I am a serial monogamist. And how would you describe your relationship status, Maida?
I'm married and I've been in a relationship with the same person for a ridiculously long amount of time.
Nearly so here we go. Two experts on the topic of no strings attached sexual relations. Here we go. Yes. Great. So let's get started with No Strings Attached, 2011. Lifelong friends, Emma, Natalie Portman, and Adam, Ashton Kutcher, take their relationship to the next level by having sex. Afraid of ruining their friendship, the new lovers make a pact to keep things purely physical, with no fighting, no jealousy, and no expectations. Emma and Adam pledge to do whatever they want, wherever they want, as long as they do not fall in love. The question then becomes, who will fall first? Okay, so that is what Google tells us that this movie is about. But Maida, what is this movie really about?
Well, I think calling them friends is a little bit of a stretch because they do know each other. But unlike the second movie we're going to be talking about, I don't necessarily think that they are friends. They are more like acquaintances when the movie starts, before they start hooking up together. And it's about two people who have extremely difficult backgrounds in terms of relationships and their parents and their families. And Natalie Portman's character is a med student, and Ashton Kutcher's a writer for a TV show. Well, not yet. He's like a production assistant for a TV show. And they make this deal because Natalie Portman, as a med student, says, I'm busy, I don't have time to have a relationship, but I would love to have sex with someone, so you as an acquaintance don't fall in love with me, she says very pointedly, but let's have sex. And of course, we know what happens.
Of course, because it's a rom-com.
Because it's a rom-com.
An issue we will discuss.
So even though, very much like Walk to Remember, the famous line, don't fall in love with me, we can do this thing together, but don't fall in love with me, already tells you how this movie's going to turn out.
Right, and let's start with that. I mean, I think my issue with this movie in general is that while Emma is pretty clear about her feelings about, listen, I'm not emotionally available, I'm really busy, I'm doing my residency as a doctor, I would like to have sex with you, but I don't really want to do any of the other stuff. Adam is pretty persistent in saying, like, cool, 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 I hear what you want, but I'm just going to ignore that and sort of pursue you in a romantic way anyway. And I don't know, that just seems not as romantic as maybe I would like it to be, I think, in my opinion.
Well, and I think that's the hard part about them not really being friends from the get-go, is that he is very much, he doesn't know how to be her friend. He only knows how to be a boyfriend, it seems like. Mm. And so he doesn't know how to be friends with benefits, right? He doesn't know the friends part. So his version of being friends is actually trying to have a relationship. So he's a little bit confused on that front. Of course, we see his whole, like, backstory, and we understand why he's so messed up about just human relationships in general. But yeah, I think you're right that he doesn't really know how to be friends with her, so that just turns into him trying to make her his girlfriend.
I think that that's a good point, and so maybe we should delve a little further into this issue of both of their backgrounds, which are offered from the beginning of the movie onward as a kind of explanation for why they are the way that they are. So let's start with Adam. So what's Adam's deal? Why is it that he only wants to be a boyfriend and he's sort of uncomfortable with this friends with benefits setup?
So we learn that Adam's dad is played by Kevin Kline, who is a famous actor who is big on some TV show and is constantly falling in and out of relationships, marriages, etc. And I believe Adam Kutcher's mother is dead in this movie. I believe so, but
I believe that that's right.
Before she died. Maybe they got divorced before she died, but regardless, she is dead. The parents haven't been together for a while. And you see that at the beginning when he meets Natalie Portman's character at summer camp, is that they both kind of bond over having parents that are not together, whether by divorce or by death, or just arguing. So, yeah. And then you find out that his father has started dating his ex-girlfriend, Ashton Kutcher's ex-girlfriend, who's a nightmare.
Yeah, she is a full-on nightmare, which sort of makes you wonder, like, this poor guy, does he really have the best taste in women? I mean, he clearly dated earlier this sort of, like, I guess she's supposed to be, like, a kind of aughts LA socialite type that doesn't really have a strong set personality.
Yeah, mm-hmm. LA by way of South Africa, very bizarre, kind of hippie, but also very, like, likes a lot of money, goes to Burning Man, takes a lot of drugs.
So she could not be more different from
Charming.
Emma.
But they're both emotionally unavailable, but one because she's low-key a psychopath, and the other one because she's a med student, question mark?
But maybe that's my concern, is I sort of feel bad for Adam that, like, he's really into emotionally unavailable women, so maybe that was my, like, innate spidey sense watching this movie, is I kept thinking, like, no, don't do it, Adam, be with a girl who will receive your love. But, I mean, Emma's not set up for that, and
right.
I am less sure about why Emma is not set up for that. What was your read on her background explanation for why she's sort of cold?
Oh, I feel like this was just, like, someone saw Garden State, and they were like, oh, Natalie Portman plays this character super well. Let's give her this. I mean, it's just like Garden State, where at the beginning there's, like, random funerals, right? Where, like, in Garden State there's two funerals that pop up in the first 20 minutes of the movie. And so in this one, it's the same thing where when they meet for the second time, because you see them meet at summer camp, and then you see them meet the second time, and they're at a frat party at the University of Michigan. Natalie Portman sees Ashton Kutcher and invites him to go with her to, quote-unquote, a thing the next day, which turns out to be her father's funeral. She's like, yeah, just come with me to this thing. It's, you know, low-key my father's funeral. And so he comes, not dressed for the occasion, of course, because he was not set up for success. So he shows up, like, hungover, in a hoodie and shorts, and probably flip-flops, to a funeral. Poor Ashton.
Yeah. Exactly. Poor Adam, who just gets sucked into these women who, for some reason, have been carved out like hollow jack-o'-lanterns of emotion. Like, it's a very strange thing.
And you get a read later from Emma's mother, where she says that, you know, when Emma's father died, she feels like Emma kind of shut herself off to the world because she wanted her mother not to see her suffer or to be in pain or anything. So she kind of closed herself off emotionally. A little bit strange because Emma's father doesn't die until she's like halfway through college. So for something like to be that drastic in her way of interacting with the world is interesting and intense, but
well, and especially because the first scene we see the two of them in, they're at summer camp, and we already sort of get a sense in that scene when they're 12, I think,
mm-hmm.
that Emma's not super emotional. She doesn't seem to have a good read on how to engage with people on a sort of empathetic level. So the movie kind of undermines itself there, sort of trying to, I think, push in this explanation for why she's so cold.
But maybe that's what makes her a good doctor. Question mark, because she's unemotional as a woman, so she's therefore a good doctor.
Great emotionless women doctors. That's more of what the world needs.
Oh, yes, definitely. Yeah.
But it is also interesting to me that Emma seems very sort of clear about what she wants out of her, you know, entanglements with men. And then that starts to change, not only because she's sort of met up with Adam, but also because suddenly her sister is engaged and then her mother has this boyfriend, and that is what convinces her that maybe she should be in relationships, despite earlier describing herself as, quote, having an emotional peanut allergy.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's the whole trope of like, oh, the younger sister got engaged, now you're seriously in trouble, because if your younger sibling gets engaged, married, has a baby before you, you are permanently damaged and there's something wrong with you. Yeah, so there's a little bit of that where you feel like she does begin to shift just because her sister is getting engaged, which is a little bit bizarre. Because none of her friends really have strong relationships until the end, so it really just relies on her relationship with her mom and her sister.
Yeah, it is sort of intriguing. I hadn't thought about that, that she sort of lives with a bunch of, well, I shouldn't say a bunch, of two other women residents. And yeah, they sort of get tied up in the end, a la Shakespearean comedy as well. But neither of them are really portrayed as being emotionless, right? Would you say?
Well, okay. So Mindy Kaling, I'm just going to shout out Mindy Kaling being in this movie because it was the first time I saw her outside of The Office, which was very exciting. But she is kind of shown as being somewhat emotionless, right? Because you see her character, she is irritated about being single, but more about, like, less about the emotional attachment and more about just having someone, because at the end of the movie, when we have, I don't know if it's like an after credit scene or something, you see her with the attractive doctor who Emma was also kind of seeing, maybe, we're not really sure, and she's telling him that she's been seeing lots and lots of other people and not dating him exclusively, and she also is kind of cold to Emma when Emma is very depressed and tells her that she's depressing to be around. So there's a little bit of a, I guess, an analogy there with all these women doctors not being extremely emotional.
Yes, there may be something there, especially considering that also in this house of amazing residents, there is the great Greta Gerwig. Greta Gerwig is in this movie, everyone. Who knew that? I didn't. Unbelievable. Brilliant actor, writer, director, Greta Gerwig. And she also sort of has a, I wouldn't say unfeeling, but almost like mildly at times, I have to admit that with these doctors, I sort of wondered, like, at least with Greta Gerwig's character, like, is she trying to be portrayed as being, like, somewhat on the autism spectrum or someone who truly, like, struggles with social norms because she has so much difficulty engaging with people in a sort of, like, a socially norm kind of way? But yeah, in the end, she sort of gets hooked up with guys by virtue of Emma's own sort of flowering into relationships, which is really intriguing that they all sort of catch it at the same time. Right. Though I did want to say as a note, the guy who was parallel pursuing Emma against Ashton Kutcher's Adam, also a really strange character because he gives Adam this whole speech where he says, you know, you're the guy that she hooks up with, you're her friend with benefits, but I'm the guy she's going to marry, which made me sort of feel like, whoa, 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 buckaroo. First of all, she's at least had a conversation with Adam about what she wants out of a relationship. You clearly have no idea what's going on with her because she has never not once talked about the possibility of marriage, never not once. But so boo to that guy.
But I kind of love that because he comes in saying, like, you're the guy that she's, you know, friends with benefits with, fuck buddies with. You're the, like, fun in your 20s guy, but I'm the guy for life. And he very specifically says, like, I will provide for her. And I love that he's not the one that wins. And that Adam also doesn't take that as a, oh, I have to suddenly get my life together and try to provide for Emma. Because Emma's going to be a doctor. She doesn't need anybody, bro. Like, she doesn't need you to be the big, strong doctor that's going to provide for her in her life. She's going to be the doctor. I like that, you know, he comes in with that kind of mentality of, like, oh, this is, like, the old school. Like, this is the guy you're supposed to marry. This is the guy you just hook up with. But she shouldn't end up with that guy because she's actually really strong and she's kind of the one who's going to be doing things with her life and doesn't need Adam to play that role for her, right? She needs more of, like, a supportive kind of guy, not someone who's going to take over everything.
I think that's really well put, and leads us to a question I think we should briefly touch on before we pivot to our second film of the conversation. And it's the question of, what is this movie saying about friends with benefits or sex without commitment or fuck buddies or what have you?
I mean, I think both of these movies and the concept of fuck buddies in general in TV movies is that it's not really possible, that it's going to either lead to disaster or, like, epic romance, because people are not actually able to silo their feelings in terms of, like, lust and love. And so it's just not possible that someone is going to cave. And I do like that they gender flip it a little bit in this movie so that he is the one that is trying really, really hard. And she's the one who's a little bit more like cold. And he's the one who's left dangling on the string most of the time.
That is true.
Yeah, that it's just not possible. It's like in your last episode when you were asking, can a man and a woman ever be friends? I think that it's almost the exact same question with the added complication of sex. Like, no, you can't be friends, and no, you can't have sex without falling in love.
Yes, I think that that's very much what this film is saying. And even as, like, an expansion on that, I think through Natalie Portman's character, like, while it's great that Emma is the more, like, the one that needs to be convinced into a relationship as opposed to every other rom-com ever written, I do think it's interesting that the film assumes that either you're sort of like filled with emotion and that is the relationship, or you have no emotion and that is the sex. And somehow there's like a very clear dividing line there that the film simultaneously is sort of saying like, okay, if you want to just have sex, then you have no emotion. But once you start having sex, that automatically leads to a relationship, which is a sort of confusing ideology in and of itself, I think.
Yeah, and we're going to see it in the second movie where they try even harder and they set up a rule and swear on a Bible and do all these kind of things to put it very much in place. But despite what you do, you can never successfully just be friends with benefits. That it's going to break in some way.
Well, speaking of friends with benefits, Maida, let's go ahead and pivot exactly as you put it to the film of that title, Friends with Benefits, 2011, which I'd like to asterisk this and say that I was absolutely upset when I realized that the movie called No Strings Attached did not have Justin Timberlake in it, which, you know, on this, the 20th anniversary of the album No Strings Attached, I'm very upset.
Well, I think actually the No Strings Attached movie was initially supposed to be called Friends with Benefits, and then because they were putting out Friends with Benefits, they had to change the name to No Strings Attached.
Oh my God, that makes it even worse.
And you would think that they would like have made a choice in the boardroom to be like, hey, we should put Justin Timberlake in the one called No Strings Attached.
Or maybe Justin Timberlake put his fist down and he was like, guys, I'm not
doing that.
All right, let's go to this Justin Timberlake starring vehicle. The film is called Friends with Benefits, and here is the summary. Jamie, Mila Kunis, is a New York-based executive recruiter who entices Dylan, Justin Timberlake, an art director from Los Angeles, to take a job at the New York office of GQ magazine. Finding that they have much in common, the two become fast friends. Feeling jaded by a number of broken romances, Dylan and Jamie decide that they are ready to quit looking for true love and focus on having fun. However, complications unfold when the two best pals add sex to their relationship. Maida, that's what Google says, but what do you think this movie is really about?
Well, I think, first of all, the bizarre thing is that it sets you up like they are going on so many dates and only finding garbage out there in New York City. Then they, like, have to, you know, turn to their friend. Except you only see each of them in, like, one other relationship. So these two are not trying very hard. So that's a little bit of a misinformation.
Yeah, and
they
once
have like
again,
one relationship, and they're like, "Oh, that was terrible. Why don't we just have sex?"
You're right, and once again, we have a situation where we're not looking at two people who have a long-term established friendship, even though they're sort of making it seem like that. They're calling them "quote unquote" best pals. They're people that had a meet cute through work and then decided to start having casual sex with each other, which is a very different situation.
Yeah. So Jamie is. She's a headhunter, and she finds Dylan at this, like, online blog and then brings him in to be the art director for GQ. And then he is like, oh, show me around New York because I'm new here. I'm from LA. And she shows him around New York, and they become really good friends. And I think this movie does set them up as friends first, better than the other movie. I will give it that. And that they actually, like, go around the city together, they explore, they get to know each other a little bit more and hang out before the inevitable conversation of, I can't find anyone on my one date.
The way that they get started is that they're just hanging out and they're not watching a rom-com, right? Or are they? Aren't they watching that like fake rom-com?
Yes, the fake rom-com. That's actually the best part of this whole movie is the fake rom-com with Jason Segel and Rashida Jones that is supposedly Jamie's favorite movie, that she's this cool girl who, despite being like such a badass, actually loves rom-coms and is waiting for Prince Charming, and this garbage fake rom-com that they make is her favorite movie. And there's actually, I feel like there's a lot better critiques of rom-coms in general in the fake inner movie than in this Friends with Benefits movie.
That's a really good point. And I think that, like, the whole problem with Mila Kunis's character Jamie is encapsulated in the moment when they decide to start having casual sex together, because, like you said, they're watching this rom-com and we're led to believe that she loves this, like, fairy tale ending and she's looking for her fairy tale ending. But then when they're watching the movie, her response is like, man, I really wish that sex was like tennis, that it was just like something you could do every once in a while. And it's very confusing. It's unclear if, like, what she ultimately wants is this fairy tale ending or what she ultimately wants is, like, I don't know, just to have like sex and intimacy apart from that fairy tale. It doesn't quite know what to do with her as a character.
I feel like it doesn't know what to do with Mila Kunis's character or Justin Timberlake's character, because they set up these kind of tracks for both of these characters, but then they constantly like undercut these tracks. And I feel bad for the actors because I feel like it's very hard for them to sell it, right? Because Mila Kunis has to play this girl who is, she's like the cool girl, right? She brings him in for GQ. She's a headhunter, which is like a really ambitious kind of job. And she's supposed to like be this girl who's, you could have casual sex with, who you can go to baseball games with, who you can, you know, go all over New York City, the like cool parts. But at the same time, she loves rom-coms and like the fairy tale ending. And then Justin Timberlake is supposed to be this art director who's very bad at math. But he also has these weird moments where he's supposed to be, like, kind of geeky or kind of nerdy, but he can't sell it because he's Justin Timberlake. Like, he's a cool dude. So when he says, like, oh, I have this little lightning bolt tattoo because I wanted to have superpowers, da-doy, I'm a dork, you're like, no, you're not. And then whenever he talks...
You're Justin Timberlake, stop
you're
it.
You're Justin Timberlake, stop. And then every time he talks about Harry Potter, which people problematically tell him he's gay for liking Harry Potter...
Oh, that's a whole other...
All of the rampant homophobia in both of these movies.
And the random transphobic joke that yes. happens that I could not believe.
Yes.
It was so unnecessary. Bad. Not that any transphobic like commentary is ever necessary, but it was especially blatant.
And you're trying to tell me that the art director of GQ who got headhunted is this like low-key, like nerdy, geeky character? Get out of here. Absolutely not. Like, so they're trying to make both of them into these characters, but then at the same time undercut it to be like, oh, you think Mila's cool, but she loves rom-coms. Oh, you think Justin Timberlake's cool? He likes Harry Potter. Dude, everyone likes Harry Potter. It's 2011.
Yes, I agree that I think the characterization is really confused, but one thing that I do think is really interesting about this movie in conversation with No Strings Attached as far as how the characters are built is that all of the characters in these movies, all of the main characters have, quote unquote, messed up parent issues, right?
Like damaged.
They are damaged by their parents who have bad relationships. So in this case, at least in Friends with Benefits, I think that the way that they set up the parents as bad influence was more interesting to me.
Oh, definitely. And I think like for Mila Kunis's character and for Justin Timberlake's character, they set it up a lot nicer that they have these very complex relationships with their parents. And that's actually the better written part of the movie, is their relationships with their parents. And so much so that I would have rather that this movie was about two friends that helped each other work through their issues with their parents. I was like, I don't need them to sleep with each other or fall like in love with each other. They just need to help each other with their own parent issues. Because that was actually the best part of the movie, was their relationships with their parents.
I unabashedly love Patricia Clarkson in this movie as Mila Kunis' mother, who is a hot mess. We're led to believe that she's very, sexually adventurous, and she has a lot of lovers, and she goes all over the place. But she is so charming, and she's so lovely, and genuinely like loves her daughter at the same time. So it's interesting how the film. There's a moment where Justin Timberlake's character, the sort of like emotional climax of the film is Dylan after he's taken Jamie home to California to meet his family. Okay. Basically throws her under the bus when he thinks she's not listening and says that, you know, she's damaged. She has all these issues. Like, she's
Magnum
a mess.
P.I. can't sort out what's in her head.
Yeah. Right, which I don't understand at all, because I don't think we've been led to believe that she's really that damaged. Like,
but we're led to
believe
that he really, really doesn't want his family to think that he's in a relationship. why? I have no idea.
Yeah, that circle is a little bit hard to square. But the part about the relationship falling apart that I did like was that I thought that the relationship between Dylan and Jamie was a little bit more realistic to me than the relationship between Adam and Emma, just because it had a realistic level of being just genuinely confused about what you want versus what you think you're supposed to want in these situations of friends with benefits. They're genuinely confused about, one, the status of their relationship, and two, what either or both of them wants out of it, which I thought was very refreshing and real.
Well, I mean, I think what's hard is that in Friends with Benefits, both of them enter into this Friends with Benefits agreement on equal footing, right? Like when they have the scene where they swear on the Bible and the iPad, and they set up all their rules for how they're going to approach this Friends with Benefits relationship, they're doing it on even footing. So as a concept of Friends with Benefits, it makes more sense. No strings attached, they enter into the agreement on uneven footing, because Adam Kutcher's character is only agreeing to it because he's already infatuated with Emma. So the movie never really has a relationship of Friends with Benefits because they're not entering into the agreement on equal footing. He's in love with Emma, and Emma's just found a way to kind of like flirt around with him, have sex with him without having to make any kind of emotional commitment. And he's letting her because he's so desperate to be near her.
Okay, well then that makes me wonder. So we've established what we think No Strings Attached is saying about Friends with Benefits. But this is, as you were saying, not exactly a true Friends with Benefits scenario. In the film Friends with Benefits, what is this film saying about No Strings Attached / sex with your friend?
I think they're saying that, I mean, I think it comes across as the same message. You know, I think that it's saying that, like, even if you both think it's going to be platonic and you enter into this on a basis where there's essentially a contract, it still can't work out. And that it just follows the exact same pattern of men and women can't be friends and they can't have sex with each other without eventually falling for each other. And it does a better job of the characters actually initially siloing that relationship, because they do stop having sex for a period of time, right? They're friends with benefits, and then they cut themselves off while she tries to date someone else. It still ends up the same way, where they fall in love with each other.
So I think putting all these things together, just to like round it out and talk about these films even further in conversation with one another, I'm super curious about, because this issue of like, I'm damaged by my parents trope is a thing in rom-coms, definitely.
Oh, yes.
But I think it's really intriguing that it's so prominent and these two in particular. So I want to like talk a little bit about, why is it that these Friends with Benefits movies are so tied up with I have bad parents?
Because I think the idea is that you would only want to enter into this kind of a relationship if you didn't know how to have a traditional relationship. You are only entering into this Friends with Benefits type of relationship because you are damaged in some way, which is kind of bizarre. Like, anyone who is normal, quote unquote normal, wouldn't want to do this because it's so bizarre, but you have to be damaged to want to separate out your sexual relationship and your emotional relationship because you are maybe somehow incapable of having an emotional relationship.
Which is so infuriating, because in both of these movies, I think it's actually the insertion of emotional pressure and societal pressure that messes up the kind of beautiful sort of encounters that both of these couples have. Like, even though, as we've discussed, and it is my problem child, No Strings Attached being that they start on uneven footing.
Yeah.
If they had been able to sort of lean into like, okay, well, sure, like we're on uneven footing, but let's forget about the societal pressure. Let's forget about the kind of like emotional intimacy. They were having a lot of fun together. And the same is true for Friends with Benefits. So it's interesting that the films are almost like telling us one thing and showing us another.
Yeah, it's discouraging anyone from thinking that you could have that kind of a relationship. Or it's saying that like, oh, you can do it, but only for a little while because you have to follow what society tells you and eventually continue this and transform it into a traditional relationship.
The pressure will get you.
Yes, this is only step one. Like, you can't just have this kind of a relationship. It has to, in some point, like turn into a traditional relationship. It can't stand alone.
What was going on in 2011 that both of these movies were made in the same year? Like, we were in college. Like, was this the year of casual sex? Why 2011?
I was in a similar relationship in 2011. I don't know what other people were doing.
Oh, the details come out.
So for me, No Strings Attached was like, I think I was like, I very highly identified with this movie because I was like, oh yeah, like maybe it was. Maybe that was just like, there was something in the water where people were like, oh, Friends with Benefits, like we should all try it. It's a good idea. And then we all, like, not all of us were burned, but maybe some of us were burned by this idea of like, oh no, this is not possible. So we liked having movies because oftentimes in these type of relationships, someone gets hurt, right? And we see it in No Strings Attached that Adam gets really hurt by it. Mm-hmm. And that's his own damn fault because he enters into this relationship knowing that he's actually in love with this girl and he shouldn't just be, you know, casual sex buddies with her. So he gets burned. And so I think, like, these movies for people who have gotten burned by these relationships are somewhat comforting to be like, oh, this doesn't work anyway. It's a flawed system.
Yeah, like, it didn't work out because, not because there was something wrong with me or with my partner. It was because, yeah, this is just, it's doomed. It's doomed from the start in a beautiful, romantic, and sometimes infuriating way.
Well, yeah, I mean, they're definitely movies made for people in their early 20s or college age. Like, I would say that that is the audience for these movies, is people who don't know what they want, who haven't figured it out yet and are still struggling. It's not for, and I think that's why, like, when I was in college and I saw these movies, I had a much more fond memory, and when I watch them now, I was slightly embarrassed by how much I had liked these movies when I was younger.
I just want to take a second to say the period scene in No Strings Attached is one of the most bonkers things I have ever seen. For people who haven't seen it, Natalie Portman's character's entire apartment gets synced up on their periods and acts like they've never had periods before and seem like they're all dying, which is quite funny to watch because it's Mindy Kaling, Greta Gerwig, and Natalie Portman doing it. Yes. But I was losing my mind.
Well, so once again, there must have been something in the water in 2011 because I remember this being like, I thought it was the funniest scene when I was in college and I saw this movie, mostly because, like, I can imagine your girlfriends and you just commiserating over all being on your period at the same time and just acting ridiculous, like you had been shot or something, just because it was really fun. But I also feel like having Ashton Kutcher's character show up with chocolate was supposed to be this, like, grand romantic kind of gesture because it was a man who was not grossed out or anything about a woman being on her period. And I remember this moment in time having very similar experiences in college where men were suddenly like, no, we're really supportive about you being on your period. Like, can we get you chocolate? Do you need a heating pad? Like, I don't know if there was an article in GQ or if there was an article in Men's Health that was like, men, being scared of periods is outdated now. You must be supportive of women and their menstrual cycles. So maybe that this was just part of the moment that it was very romantic for him to be understanding and also bring them cupcakes.
You know what? You may well be right. I think it's just my jaded 2020 eyes that were like, oh my God, get out of here. What do you want? Your male feminist banner? Walk away, Ashton Kutcher.
In 2020, the bar is in hell. And, you know, this is like, what are you doing? But for 2011, this was like very advanced for a white man, a white straight man.
That's a grand romantic gesture in No Strings Attached, right?
Yes.
So how does that compare to the grand romantic gesture in Friends with Benefits, you think? Or
gestures? I hate the flash mob. I hate the flash mob. Once again, very much of its time. So
2011, my God.
So 2011. Like, and also a little bit old in 2011. Like, it was definitely on the downswing of flash mobs being cool. I don't know how long the production time took on this movie, but I even remember seeing the movie and being like, well, that's a little outdated at this point. But yeah, I get that, like, the planning is great and it's in Grand Central Station or whatever, but it's so public. I'm not a fan of it. I'm sure other people are, and if you're supposed to be like her and you love these rom-coms that have, like, big romantic, like, public romantic gestures, I guess it's nice. But I definitely prefer the No Strings Attached. Like, it's just about you and your friends and not about, like, making a hullabaloo in Grand Central Station.
Though I think I, like, am so in love now, but not in maybe a totally positive way, with the fact that both of these movies were so zeitgeisty at the time that big romantic, like, gesture scenes are also super zeitgeisty. I think that that's hilarious. Like, how funny and how telling about the whole friends with benefits moment in our popular culture. Because now I feel like with hookup apps, I mean, the notion of friends with benefits is so common that it's hardly even worth talking about.
Yeah, although I wonder if like the friend, I mean, I think the friends aspect is a part where it really just falls down because they're not really friends. So, but yeah, I think with the apps, you're going to see a totally different set of rom-coms based around that, which wouldn't make sense for these movies at all. So these movies really are a fantastic snapshot of 2011.
Yeah, why do all of these rom-coms pre, let's say, 2015 have to have, like, gay accessories? Like, why?
Except I feel like they thought they were being so subversive and so, like, cool because both of the gay friend characters are not your stereotypes of the early 2000s, right? Because in No Strings Attached, one of the med students, he's like this, like, you know, bigger guy who's a med student. He's not flamboyant in any way, really. In Friends with Benefits, it's Woody Harrelson, for the love of God. Like, what? Who told Woody Harrelson that he should be playing a gay man?
I was at a loss for words when that came about. I was at a full loss for words.
When I'm still watched not quite it sure again, what to do with it. I had totally erased that from my memory. I had completely forgotten because it was so bizarre and who made that casting choice? Yeah, but it was both like two non-stereotypical or non, at that point, traditional representation of gay men, which I think they thought was really progressive and forward, but now in hindsight is extremely strange and problematic in its own way, the way that they represent these characters. So
exactly. And I hope that someone somewhere has done like an entire book-length study about why rom-coms that are not about queerness want to have queerness at least associated with the movie as some sort of sign-off on the, like, I don't know, the sexuality or the romance or the subversiveness of the film. It's very, very weird because none of these films are actually interested in queer sexuality in a real way, no, except for that photo shoot scene in Friends with Benefits where Woody Harrelson is just, like, full on, like, displaying some man-loving man sexuality. But even then, it's not really, like, pure. It's a joke.
Yeah, and it's being somewhat exploitative of the male models. And all of his jokes are, it's bizarre because they're kind of at the expense of gay men, but because it's being said by a gay character, it's supposed to be okay. Except that you know that the actor playing the character is straight. So you're not really getting away with everything you think you're getting away with.
I mean, just a pitch to the world. I don't know if this movie has already been written, but someone should really write a rom-com called Friends with Benefits, but it should be about men who have sex with men. I would watch that movie because I think that there's a much more interesting history, like romantic history in the queer community of that. And I think it would be really interesting. So somebody out there who can write, maybe Greta Gerwig.
Yeah.
Find or some really great screenwriter and make that happen.
If there's already a movie like that. Or maybe there's already a movie.
Yeah,
like
if someone
that,
knows of a movie like that, let us know. If there is a Friends with Benefits movie about the queer community, like, hit us up. Let us know. Final question. Which of these couples do we think has the best chemistry? Who would you say?
Okay, so I personally am just not a big fan of Justin Timberlake. Not because I don't like him or anything. I don't think he's that attractive. I'm not attracted to him in any way. But he and Mila Kunis, I think because their relationship at the top is so businesslike and they are friends, it's harder to see the chemistry between them. Whereas I think that Ashton Kutcher plays this, like, lovesick puppy character so much better. And so you do see at least some sort of chemistry between him and Natalie Portman. I wouldn't say that, like, either of them are, like, on fire, either of these couples, but I think that there's a little bit more connection between Ashton Kutcher and Natalie Portman.
I think I'm going to cheat on this question and say that, like, in terms of on-screen chemistry just in general, I think Mila Kunis and Justin Timberlake work better together as actors. Like, their comedic timing is really good. They understand each other. They can sort of be at the same level. But I can understand that I think there is a little bit more frisson, that, you know, indefinable thing between Natalie Portman and Ashton Kutcher. But I don't know. There's something about their relationship together on screen that didn't feel real to me, which is super interesting. Although they did have that sort of traditional, I think, like you said, like, stars in their eyes, like, romantic, like, sizzle.
Yeah, in terms of, like, the traditional rom-com, they kind of fit that relationship better, whereas we never really got to see Justin Timberlake and Mila Kunis have that, like, moment of really being romantically attracted to each other until the very, very end.
So true.
The build-up came really, really late in the movie as opposed to... Because they... And I think it was almost like... It was hard to balance it because they wanted to establish them being friends so much that we didn't actually get any romance until the very end of the movie.
Well, we may not be able to say that these movies are entirely poisonous. They have their upside, but I still think we need some antidotes for this very, maybe anti-sex, maybe anti-casual sex film. What are your antidotes for No Strings Attached and Friends with Benefits, Maida?
Okay, so I have two antidotes, one for each. So No Strings Attached was written by Elizabeth Merriweather of New Girl fame. And I very much think that you can tell that this movie was written by a woman, mostly because Adam suffers a lot. And the fact that the male part of the relationship is the one that has to suffer through most of the movie, I think is very telling. But so my antidote for this would be New Girl. And I think what's nice about No Strings Attached is that they're, even though they're side characters, there are a lot more people of color in No Strings Attached than even show up at all in Friends with Benefits. Mm-hmm. And so if you're looking for something with like a really awesome ensemble cast that shows lots of different relationships, I would suggest New Girl. Still not great with like gay relationships. They really don't show up in New Girl, but as an antidote to Friends with No Strings Attached, her first project, I think New Girl fixes a lot of things that she was kind of working through. For Friends with Benefits, just because I love the relationships with their parents and I thought that was the superior part of the movie, I'm going to go totally in a different direction and say, watch Whip It. It's a Drew Barrymore movie with Ellen Page. And I think it actually has it shares some actors from one of the movies, but I think the relationship between Ellen Page and her mother in the movie is really amazing and kind of mirrors the relationship between Patricia Clarkson and Mila Kunis' character. Not in the same way, but it's a really lovely mother-daughter relationship.
My antidote for both of these films is actually just one book. And it's a book that I really fell in love with when I read it last year. It's called Patience by John Coates and is published by the lovely Persephone Books in London. Patience is about a young Catholic woman in the 1950s who's married to this man who she gave three children to. And now their sex life has basically died. And he was never really a very sexual person, but because she's very devoutly Catholic, she sort of, you know, lets that part of herself go and calls it a day. But then she meets this man named Philip, and she sort of falls into his arms immediately because he's so charming, he's so thoughtful, he's so caring. They go back to his flat, and even though she's married and they both know it's wrong and she's a very devout Catholic, they have sex and she has an orgasm for the first time. And what's beautiful about this is that they actually say to each other, we're not going to be friends with benefits. We're not going to be sort of this liaison affair. The unfolding of the book after that is really the story where it's her sort of working through like, this is what I want. This is what I demand from life. And my partner and I have the same wants, the same needs. We've discussed it. And we're just going to freaking do it. And it's her and her partner negotiating with the world about how to make that life work for them. And I just love that these two characters are being communicative. They both know what they want and they are committing to it. And I just think that that is what you need after watching these movies. People who know what they want.
Yeah, I think no one in this movie knows what they want until maybe the very, very end, if that.
Yeah, it's sort of infuriating, but also I can't decide if I hate it or if I think like I hate it because I feel so called out by it. Maida, I think we have come to the end of our epic Friends with Benefits showdown. We are friends. There are no benefits except for the benefits of you being on this podcast. So that's good. I'm happy. I'm happy to be in that state. Thank you for listening to the Rom-Com Killjoys podcast. The show is produced by Liza Bertrand and me, Janelle Walker. Our theme song is Lady Slut Hitchhike Love by the band A Giant Dog. And the song you're listening to now is a cover of one of my favorites, Baby Love by Colin Langanis. You can follow the show on Instagram and Facebook at Rom-Com Killjoys. And don't forget, don't let anyone kill your joy. Not me, not a rom-com, not anyone. See you next time. Instead of
breaking up. It starts with kissing and making.